Well, here's a milestone for you. The 2012 election marks the first time in nearly 70 years that neither presidential candidate has served in the military. The last time, 1944, when Thomas Dewey challenged Franklin Roosevelt. Even then, Roosevelt had served as Assistant Secretary of the Navy, so technically he kind of qualified. But is military experience necessary to be an effective commander-in-chief during wartime? Here's Harry Truman.
My fellow Americans, I want to talk to you plainly tonight about what we're doing in Korea and about our policy in the Far East. In the simplest terms, what we're doing in Korea is this. We're trying to prevent a third world war.
And that war ended inconclusively there in Korea. Here's LBJ on Vietnam.
As president and commander-in-chief, it is my duty to the American people to report that renewed hostile actions against United States ships on the high seas in the Gulf of Tonkin have today required me to order the military forces of the United States to take action in reply.
The end of the Vietnam conflict, though, came during Ford's presidency, did not end well at all. Presidential power in wartime has changed dramatically over the years, and yet the challenges remain the same, both politically and militarily. Joining us is Andrew Polsky, author of really a fascinating book that we were just talking about here. Why wasn't this written 100 years ago? Elusive Victories. He's professor of political science at Hunter College. It's a book that focuses on the wartime presidents. Andrew, first of all, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, presidents have to be judged on their ability in wartime, and American history is filled with presidents. And, of course, there's a tradition of civilian leadership in the United States, so it's not the case that generals always lead us in wartime. But presidents in wartime, this is a very extraordinary sort of political test.
Yes, it is. And it turns out, actually, that military experience is not critical for a president to be effective as a wartime leader. That's because most of the tasks that a president performs during wartime are political rather than military.
And, of course, the huge example that really hasn't been surpassed since is Abraham Lincoln.
That's right. And Lincoln has essentially no military experience and learns on the job. He learns very well and does a very good job as a wartime president.
You know, let's go into that a little bit. I mean, Abraham Lincoln did literally learn on the job. He was reading accounts of military strategy and trying to second guess the generals who, in many cases, had no respect for him.
That's right. But he realized early on that they effectively had no more experience than he did when it came to waging large-scale war. The United States hadn't done that up until that point. The officers who were in a position to command during the Civil War had no experience essentially commanding anything larger than a cavalry troop on the Western Plains. So he realized he would have to actively intervene and steer his generals, and that worked for him in the first part of the war. Later in the war, he stepped back and let his generals like Grant take on most of the responsibility for conducting campaigns.
But it was the civilian Abraham Lincoln who had the insight that this Civil War was the first modern industrial age conflict, and he was ahead of the generals on that, and that was the key piece of leadership.
That's right. He did appreciate the nature of the war. He also had a keen sense of political timing. He understood that he had to maintain public support for the war throughout the conflict. And that was an extraordinary challenge. He handled it probably better than any other president, I think in part because he was honest and frank about what he was trying to do, and he spoke plainly to the American people. He didn't hide from the critics, and that's a page that other presidents could have learned from.
And lots of pages and lots of stories of other presidents in Elusive Victories. The author, Andrew Polsky, is here in the studio. It's all about wartime presidents. Fast forward to Lyndon Johnson, who was very much overmatched by the leaders in the Pentagon, including Robert McNamara, who wasn't a military leader but was a technocrat running the Pentagon as Secretary of Defense.
I think Johnson's key mistake was not to appreciate that a president as a wartime leader has really only a relatively brief window to shape outcomes, to shape what's going to happen in the war. He loses his freedom of action fairly quickly. Johnson, who was a consummate politician, should have recognized that this can happen in a war situation too. But he did not essentially manage the war closely, especially the ground war in South Vietnam, and he was prepared to defer too much to the military and the conduct of the war. Johnson never had a clear, coherent strategy for the Vietnam War. we could debate endlessly. Historians have been debating endlessly whether the outcome might have been different. But I think Johnson can certainly be faulted with not managing, not staying on top of the war as closely as possible, to be aware of when things weren't going well, not to search for political alternatives or military alternatives during the war.
Did George W. Bush not learn those Johnsonian lessons?
George W. Bush looked at Lyndon Johnson and thought that he had made a mistake in micromanaging the war. He was looking, that is, Bush was looking at Johnson's conduct of the air war, the bombing campaign against North Vietnam.
Where he picked the targets.
That's right.
Johnson did.
But in fact, Johnson wasn't like that when it came to managing the ground war. George W. Bush decided his way of approaching the war would be to delegate the responsibility to the Defense Department, to Rumsfeld in particular, and then to step back and let Rumsfeld manage the war. Delegation is not necessarily the wrong approach for a president to take. But if you're going to delegate responsibility, you have to also have accountability. And that's something that he never demanded of Rumsfeld. They were not on the same page.
What do you make of Barack Obama, the custodian of two wars now in this 2012 campaign?
I think Obama has learned some things as president. I didn't agree with his first set of decisions. I thought that the surge that he ordered in Afghanistan was neither here nor there. It wasn't big enough or wasn't going to last long enough to alter things on the ground significantly. But I think what he has come to appreciate is that he has very limited leverage over the situation. And one of the most important things the United States can do as it tries to draw itself out of a war is to establish some kind of long-term security partnership with the government that it wants to support. And that way, everybody who's involved, all of the other political actors, recognize that the United States is not simply picking up and leaving. In deciding this year to pursue a long-term partnership with the government in Kabul, I think Obama had the right sense of timing for what he was trying to accomplish. So I give him credit for having learned after a start that I did not think reflected particularly well in his leadership.
Maybe Barack Obama has learned the lessons of Johnson, as some other presidents have not. Andrew Polsky, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Andrew Polsky is the author of Elusive Victories. He's a professor of political science at Hunter College. The book is all about the experience of wartime presidents throughout American history.